If you were plugged into the news near the end of the 2018 Utah legislative session, you probably heard something about the establishment of an inland port in Salt Lake City's northwest quadrant. Senate Bill 234 created the Utah Inland Port Authority and set aside 20,000 acres of land for the development of an international trade hub. The bill passed after much back and forth between state and local officials. For the state, the inland port is a huge economic opportunity that's too big for the city alone to handle. And for the Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County governments, the state overstepped its authority, ignoring local control. Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Biskupski takes issue with four specific aspects of the bill: who gets the last word on the use of the land, how the tax increment is allocated, with the new Port Authority getting everything, the size and scope of the project — Salt Lake City thinks it should cover fewer acres — and the makeup of the board. The city says it isn't equitably represented. Biskupski met with Governor Gary Herbert last week to address her concerns, but by the end of the week, Herbert had signed the bill as written, though he did assure the city he would convene a special session of the legislature to revisit Biskupski's concerns. This is In the Hive. I'm Emily Means. I met the mayor in her office at the Salt Lake City and County Building a day after her meeting with Governor Herbert and one day before Herbert signed SB 234. We discussed the port, affordable housing, the city's plans for public transit, and whether or not Biskupski would seek a second term as mayor. Mayor Biskupski, KCPW hasn't caught up with you since just after you took office, so we're really excited to be able to sit down with you today. In January, you reached the halfway point for your first term in office, so mm-hmm. we just want to touch base with you on a few items. And to begin with, we're coming right off of the state legislative session. One of the biggest bills pertaining to Salt Lake City is SB 234, which creates the Utah Inland Port Authority in the northwest quarter of the city. You and the city council and even the Salt Lake County Council have been at odds with the state on this one a bit. Can you kind of explain the situation here? What happened?
Well, I think there were just different ideas about how the quadrant and the inland port should come to fruition. And those disagreements led to that final bill.
SB 234 as it is.
Right.
Okay, well, I know you can't talk much about it, but you did meet with Governor Herbert on Wednesday. Things are kind of in flux, but prior to that, he said he wouldn't veto this bill. Did you come away with any hope?
You know, I did, and we're still working through the details of how we make sure we can move forward in implementing a plan to help a port evolve in the Northwest Quadrant. And I think the governor is working in good faith to make sure that we can move forward in a productive manner.
In a collaborative way with the city, the county,
you know,
the state?
You absolutely have to be collaborative on this endeavor. You also have to include the school district. You know, they are a major taxing entity involved in this. And as we try to create a path forward, we will have to have everyone at the table working through the details on this.
Can you talk about your qualms with the bill as it stands now?
I think those have been shared, and, you know, we are working through those issues, and we'll see. You know, we have to make sure that while the governor is contemplating this, that we are also working together to try and find a solution.
Okay, well, I want to talk about the inland port because, you know, I feel like just in the past 2 weeks, I've learned more about the Northwest Quadrant and the plans for this port than I had ever known before. How does what's laid out in SB 234 differ from the Northwest Quadrant master plan that the city had in the works?
So the boundaries were expanded greatly, and included kind of some special projects around housing, which is just a distraction. We need to get back to what the port is for, and that the bill really speaks to the port itself and what we need inside those boundaries to ensure the success of a port.
Maybe you can talk about what an inland port will add to Salt Lake City. What are the benefits of an inland port?
So historically, the city has always been in a very unique position. You have a freeway system here that runs from Mexico to Alaska. You have a freeway system here that runs from coast to coast, you know, California to the East Coast. And they intersect right here in Salt Lake City, those two freeways. And then you have three transportation rail lines that all come from inland or from ports to Salt Lake City, right into Salt Lake City, all within 12 hours of the coast. So we have a very unique position with those rail lines coming into the Northwest Quadrant, with those two freeways intersecting right near that quadrant, and an international airport. So as our commerce changes and people continue to flock to wanting to order product rather than go shop for it in a store, we have to make sure that we are playing our role in the nation and around the world on how this product gets around. And so we are trying to establish this port so we can be a commerce hub that helps us move into this whole new realm of how we get product. And we are uniquely positioned to play an integral role in that, and we understand that, and we believe we need to do this work, not just for us or this region, but for the country and like I said, around the world.
Was there ever any other plan for this space?
You know, the space is very hard to develop, and it will continue to be hard to develop. You can see what's happening with the prison. It's extremely expensive to develop this land. It's why it has not been developed. And now with commerce changing how we do business so extremely and so rapidly, we feel like we are needing to make sure we move forward with development.
So you're talking about commerce, and I'm just thinking of, you know, all the things I might order online. But there's some language in the bill that makes me think there might be a different product in mind. And line 332 of the bill says, the transporting, unloading, loading, transfer, or temporary storage of natural resources may not be prohibited on the authority jurisdictional land. So what I thought of was the coal port that the state was trying to establish a couple of years ago in Oakland, California. Right. Oakland City voted to restrict coal. So does that line in the bill concern you at all? Does the state want to fulfill its dreams?
It does concern us. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that needs to be worked through over the next several weeks. I believe that as a community, we want to make sure that we are being conscientious of people's health and wellness, and that product moving through here is one thing. Storage of product and transferring it from a container or the ground into a container can cause pollution And we have tremendous concern around that.
I'm glad that you mentioned the community reaction here, because it does seem that there are, you know, people out on in the northwest side of Salt Lake who are not particularly interested in the way this is going forward. And, you know, you mentioned air quality, but there's also migratory birds to consider out in that area as mm-hmm. we get out to the lake. I'm just wondering, with Salt Lake City's master plan for this port, how are those environmental concerns taken into account?
So in our master plan, we have been very, we have acknowledged these boundaries that had been created through private property owners and NGOs who are environmental groups, who created, you know, acres of wetland that needs to be protected, and then a buffer around those wetlands. And we believe those boundaries need to remain, that that work that had been done is critical to not just the migratory bird, which obviously is a big deal, but the whole ecosystem out there and the importance of our natural ecosystems and the role they play is so much bigger than most people know. And so we want to make sure that as we do this work, that that is being protected.
Again, you talked with Governor Herbert this week, but just looking ahead, if the bill passes, what are your options here?
You know, we are still in negotiations right now, and so for me, I want to continue to work with the state to see where we can come to agreement and continue to work toward a path forward.
Okay, so let's get to the easy stuff. No. homelessness and affordable housing, always
sure.
always sure. an important topic here in Salt Lake City. We're coming up on 2019, which is the projected opening date for the new homeless resource centers and the close of the Road Home Shelter. And last week, the city council said they were worried that as the population continues to grow here, the city will need a backup plan like the Road Home. Would you be open to advocating for its remaining operational?
Well, I don't know that it needs to be the city that provides the emergency shelter. We will still have the Wiegand Center, and the Wiegand Center does provide shelter during extreme weather. For individuals and dozens of individuals. We have said as a city that we will do our part, and our part is two new resource centers and the Wiegand Center. I think those three facilities aligning with 4th Street Clinic and Palmer Court, you know, all of that is right here and very accessible. I think if there needs to be an emergency shelter, it could be established in another community and should be. We certainly are watching as our healthcare providers are working with the homeless population. We are anxiously aware that right now numbers are not decreasing. The same number of people are seeking services, and we're hoping that as this uptick in mental health care and addiction treatment really takes hold in 2018, that we'll see some of these numbers drop and we'll be closer to where we believe we will be or believed we would be come June of 2019.
Mental health care and addiction treatment, are you referring to a component of Operation Rio Grande?
So the state passed a Medicaid waiver expansion that brought into our economy $100 million. And people who qualify for that funding, a essentially are homeless. And so they are applying and accessing that funding, and treatment beds, new treatment beds are online and more are coming online. And so we're very hopeful that as people draw down this financial support and get the health care they need, that we can transition them out of homelessness.
I mentioned Operation Rio Grande. I think we're like 8 months.
6 months.
6 months. But looking back at it and looking ahead, are you seeing any improvement coming from that program?
Yes. You know, there's a lot less criminal activity in the Rio Grande neighborhood, a lot less drug dealing going on and preying on vulnerable population there. There's still some, and we are, you know, making arrests in that neighborhood still, but it's nothing like it was. I mean, it was very extreme when Operation Rio Grande was put into play. We also know that the drug dealing is moving around the valley and around the state, and we are following that. You know, as people call and report new activity, we are, you know, putting law enforcement and social workers out there to do outreach and see if we can't connect people to services while we're out there, or make necessary arrests for those who are dealing drugs. So the state number of law enforcement officers that were assigned to this is still the same, and our additional law enforcement officers are still involved in this work. So we haven't let up, and I think when we looked at our overall statistics citywide and in every district, crime has dropped by 12%. And so we know things are moving in the right direction, and we also know more needs to be done.
Of course, Operation Rio Grande ties back into homelessness, and a key component in combating that is the availability of affordable housing. Can you give us any updates on that?
Yeah, so we created Growing SLC. It's a five-year housing plan. And when we created that plan, what we had realized is the last time we even had a housing plan was almost two decades ago. Wow. So we did a five-year plan to make sure that we are checking back in. Is this the right plan? And I think moving forward, it will always be a five-year plan. And then that way, as we are experiencing growth and new issues, that we can address those much more quickly. But the plan has been great. It's been received well. And we have a tremendous opportunity this year for implementation. There was funding set aside for housing, affordable housing, and in our first year of doing this work, we were able to take a very small amount of $20 million fund. I think we spent about $5 million, maybe less, and used that to leverage over $150 million into our market for affordable housing. So we're doing a very good job of bringing that affordable housing into the market, but there are segments of the housing that needed significant time and attention. So I pulled together the Blue Ribbon Commission, and the Blue Ribbon Commission is experts in the banking industry and development and housing, and we had five priority projects that we wanted to get tax credits for. Three of those received tax credits, and so now this year, those three projects will get underway. It will bring in close to 300 permanent supportive housing units. those units will be utilized for individuals who are moving from a homeless resource center into a housing unit. So this is the next step for them as they come through a resource center.
Transitional housing?
Yeah, it is transitional. It's more permanent, meaning that there's on-site care. There will be on-site management, case management. We want to make sure that as people are moving from a resource center to a supportive housing unit, that they don't fall back, but continue to move forward. And then from that space, onto employment, which is our Dignity to Work program, but onto employment and then onto their own affordable housing unit.
If you'll humor me for just a minute, I'd like to go back to the legislative session because another major bill that passed dissolved the UTA board and created Transit District Utah. So I'm hoping you'll dream with me for a minute.
Sure.
Because this gives local municipalities a little more control mm-hmm. over their transportation, public transportation. Mm-hmm. Does Salt Lake City have a vision?
Yes. So for the first time ever, Salt Lake City has a transit master plan, which we developed last year. We're very anxious to get that plan off the ground and very excited to implement that plan. It will be very helpful to people in this community who rely on public transportation to get around. And so we have tremendous opportunity this year to utilize the potential of a sales tax increase. That sales tax increase is going out for public comment over the next month to see how the public feels about investing in our public transportation system. And one of the components we will be talking about is transit. And do we want to do a small sales tax increase to provide funding for transportation and affordable housing and clean air initiatives? And so we'll take that to the public over the next month and see what their thoughts are. But we have the plans for transit. We have the housing plan ready. We have our climate plan. We have our clean energy plan. I mean, we have been doing the planning, and now we need the public to get behind us and support the opportunity to implement.
Like I said, we're about a little more than halfway through your term, so I have to ask, are you planning on running for re-election?
Yes, I am, and I'm very excited. I love this work. I would love to have one more term so that we can continue to really make a difference in our community in the way that we had envisioned by addressing these critical needs that are barriers to people being successful in their own lives. And so we're hoping for a second term, and then I would like to go on my merry way.
You want to have fun or something?
Well, I was first elected in 1998, so I have been a public servant for a very long time, and I am very grateful for that opportunity to serve and this opportunity, and hopefully we'll get our total 8 years and leave a foundation and a foundational shift that future mayors can build on for the success of this city. So,
all right. Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Biskupski, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
What questions do you have for Mayor Biskupski? Tell us at KCPW's Facebook page, KCPW 88.3, or feel free to email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback. Thanks to the KCPW team for their support of this show, as well as to Andrew Shaw, who produced the show's theme music. And thank you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of In the Hive at kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.